being someone who's a ruminator and overthinker and who has an ego, who is highly competitive, like all those elements that serve me well in other aspects of my life were definitely a kind of an enemy of mine, you know, when I was hurting.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to episode 17 of the Mad Happy Podcast. I'm Payman.
And I'm Mason.
And we created this podcast to, of course, have conversations about mental health.
We talk about some pretty serious topics on the show. We are by no means professionals and are not giving advice. If you or someone you know needs help, please visit us at localoptimist.com/podcasts.
Today, it's our pleasure to welcome Nick Vial.
It was awesome to have Nick on. Me and him really bonded about being boys from the Midwest, who grew up in LA. I have five siblings. He had, I think, 10 or 11 siblings, and it was awesome to hear about his perspective on just those dynamics and the effect that they had on his mental health.
Yeah, and I think it was great to hear him be so open about his time on The Bachelor, how he thought about himself relative to the show, and then his career afterwards, starting the podcast, and now really being able to help so many people with the advice he's giving, and really how he's thinking about his mental health as he continues to grow up.
The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism and is now powered by Cash App. We're super excited to talk to you guys about our new sponsor, Cash App. You know, since we started the show, a lot of people had been asking us about having a sponsor, what that might look like, and we wanted to be patient, and a few people hit us up, and we really wanted to do things differently. We wanted to do something that really benefited our listeners and our audience, and obviously something that was so in tune with mental health and really being able to help give back to our community. And we couldn't be more excited to announce our sponsorship with Cash App.
Here's how it works. Each week, we'll be giving out thousands of dollars to a handful of listeners. Our hope is that you could put this money towards something that could better your mental health. Maybe it's a therapy session, maybe it's for a cup of coffee, or a donation to a cause you really care about. Whatever it is, we hope it's something that goes a long way for you in bettering yourself and your mental health. To enter, all you have to do is leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or follow the directions of our latest Instagram post on The Local Optimist. More information can be found in the show notes.
We're so excited to start this partnership with Cash App. And everyone, please enjoy the show with Nick Vial.
Today, we're joined by our friend Nick Vial. Nick, thank you so much for being here.
Great to be with you guys.
Nick, I'm curious, like, how do you introduce yourself these days when you meet someone?
Wow, I've never been asked that before. I'll just say, hi, I'm Nick. If they ask me, like, what I do, you know, I'll say, like, I host a podcast and I'm in the entertainment space. I go out of my way to not try to bring up my time on The Bachelor. And that's not because I'm trying to hide it or anything. I just think it's like a weird thing to bring up if people don't know.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, well, we definitely want to get into the podcast side soon, but I'll let Mason kick us off.
Yeah, I think it's good to think about how we all introduce ourselves now that we're about to start getting back out into the world a little bit. I want to start with where you grew up in the Midwest in Wisconsin. My family's from Michigan as well, and I grew up in LA, so I always kind of said that I was raised in LA, but really have these Midwestern values and roots, and now kind of building your life and your career in Hollywood and in Los Angeles. I wonder kind of how those values that you may have learned early on kind of stay with you today or give you kind of a different kind of perspective with just how different the worlds are between the Midwest and the West Coast.
Yeah, I mean, I think about it a lot, and you know, people always say, like, you know, people from the Midwest are really nice and have manners, and you'll hear the similar stuff from people from the South.
Yeah.
You know, I've always, you know, my roots are definitely from the Midwest, and, you know, Wisconsin kind of holds a place in my heart. I've never felt necessarily Midwest myself personally. Mm. And it's weird. Like, you know, I think, you know, my parents taught me my manners and things like that, but you know, I've always been someone who kind of goes against the grain a little bit. The thing I value the most is it is obviously just a different part of the world. And you know, people see the world very differently in the Midwest, and totally. People see the world differently in California and New York and the South. And I just think in general, anyone becomes just a generally more empathetic person when you have different perspectives. It's just easier. It's easy to criticize alternative points of view when you've never lived in an area that was different than yours, and understand why they might think and feel the way they do. And now that doesn't mean the way people think and feel are always right, but it just helps you kind of understand, you know, where they're coming from, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that, I think that's being from the Midwest and living in LA, it's just helped me understand different types of people as I meet them, because, you know, people in LA are very different than people in the Midwest, if that answers your question. So it helps me have more perspective. But it's not like I'm going around, you know, trying to like instill Midwest values in people or anything like that.
Yeah, I feel that. I feel like more perspectives is always better. And like, there's always something to learn, even if you disagree with it. I'm curious, you said like you kind of always went against the grain. We read that you grew up with like 11 siblings. I mean, like that must have been like a crazy dynamic. How did that manifest for you? Like, what was your relationship like with your siblings and parents growing up? And like, why were you the one that was like kind of going against the grain?
I'm one of 11. So I have 10 siblings. So there's 11 of us.
Yeah.
All with the same parents?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know if it even has anything to do with that. I'm the oldest boy. And so just like the birth order is kind of all over. Like, you know, I have my older sister, and then it's me, and then I have two sisters, and then my mom had four boys in a row, and then three girls in a row.
Wow.
So it's weird because, you know, I'm one of 10, but just the way I kind of fell in the order, I very much kind of operated like an only child. I've always been very independent, and you know, I played with my sisters when I was younger, but as a boy growing up, I, you know, I had my friends and did my own thing. And I was very, you know, I played a lot of sports, and my sisters, at least at an earlier age, were into sports. My other sister, you know, ended up being a professional basketball player. But when I was younger, I didn't like play baseball with her or things like that. And so I've always just been a very independent person. I just, you know, I have a lot of introverted qualities, and so I value my alone time. I didn't realize what that was when I was younger, but as I've gotten older and kind of learned more about myself, I think it's just the introverted parts that I have always been kind of independent. I'm an overthinker, and that's a pro and a con. I like to ask why, you know, things are the way they do. I have a hard time just accepting, you know, when people say, well, we have always done it this way. And I'm just like, I don't know, maybe it's the wrong way. And it's just, I think it's just the way my brain's always kind of operated. And I don't think it has anything to do necessarily with having 10 siblings, but that was certainly interesting.
Yeah, I can relate to you on kind of being an introvert and feeling independent in a big family. I grew up with 5 siblings, which was crazy for me, only half of what you had. But I also kind of struggled with feeling like I had time for myself, because there was always so many family and friends and siblings and stuff running around that, like, I didn't understand what that alone time was, and ultimately led me to kind of creating that alone time in my head, and like a lot of self-talk and a lot of daydreaming and kind of a lot of conversations just going on upstairs. It's like, that was the only time I could really find silence and like be introspective in a way. For me, it was a lot of like jealousy and comparisons, and my parents kind of just treating each of us kind of differently. I'm curious a little bit more about...
What's your birth order?
I'm middle, but I have like a blended family situation where it's from like 3 different sets of parents. So like technically I actually am an only child, which also I think contributed to a lot of me feeling just like I'm so misunderstood and no one gets me. But we all grew up in the same household since we were like 6 or 7 years old, and didn't use any of the half or step terms or anything like that. So it really did feel like one solid unit, which I'm super grateful for. But what were some of those dynamics like between 11 of you guys, and what were like some of the age ranges as well? Like, did you really grow up together? Or did it feel like that?
Yeah, I was just going to say though, but the reason I asked that question, because my therapist apparently birth order is a big deal.
Yeah.
And how we perceive our childhood and how we carry it with us. It's just kind of interesting.
Totally.
That's why I asked the question. It's, you know, my family is a little interesting just because, again, you know, thinking about just birth order, I have my older sister and then me and then my sister Maria. And we were all born, the three of us, within like a 3-year period. So we're all like, I'm a year and a half younger than my older sister Jessica and a year and a half older than my sister Maria. And then there was like a 3.5-year gap, which is not, I guess, that big of a deal. No. But like when we were kids, it felt like a lot. So we always referred to my sister Jessica and myself and Maria as the three older ones. And then all the other ones were like, in our minds, the younger ones. And
babies,
so,
yeah.
Yeah. My brother, who's closest in my age, is 7 years younger. And, you know, we have a good relationship now. But as a kid, that's a pretty huge age gap. So I think that might have also played a role in terms of like why I was often like independent or played with myself, like when I was at home. And just, you know, my friends have always been very important to me at any stage of my life. And so I always had a, like, you know, when I was younger, I had a lot of neighborhood friends and as I got older and things like that. And I always really valued my friendships and then, you know, as I got older, you know, your relationships with your siblings evolve and change. But yeah, I mean, overall, we're a close family. And then, you know, it's kind of like, you know, you love all your family. You don't necessarily like them all the same, you know, like some siblings you're pretty close with, some you're like, you're both kind of like, how would we get through a dinner if it was just the two of us? But it's family, you know, yeah. Like, yep. But we're all very close. And I value the fact that we are close. And it's kind of, you know, like my brothers, for example, it's amazing how we come from the same parents and how different we all are.
Yeah.
It's really kind of fascinating.
Does anyone live out on the West Coast, or is it just you out here?
My brother just moved to San Francisco with his girlfriend and got a new job. So he's out in San Francisco, and I actually have a brother in Seattle who moved out to Seattle in the past year, and everyone else is in Wisconsin.
Oh, I'm curious. You mentioned the birth order thing from your therapist. Like, I'd be curious to know like what your journey was to like deciding to start therapy, right? And like, I feel like we talk about that a lot on the show. Like, it seems like everyone's way more open to talking about that now. Like, how did you end up starting therapy? Like, what was like the catalyst in your life?
To be totally honest, like like you guys on my podcast, I'm constantly advocating for therapy. I have one of my shows is people call in and ask my opinion on their relationship situations. And I'm very clear that I'm not a therapist and yeah. I'm not even an expert, right? I mean, people, I appreciate the fact that people take my advice and that means a lot to me and I put a lot of thought into it. But, you know, I come from a perspective of someone who's had a handful of relationships and I've been on the side of wondering why and overthinking and talking to my girlfriends about what does it mean and why is she doing this? And I've wasted a lot of my own energy and time, you know, kind of trying to figure out why other people were doing things. And at a point in my life, I when I learned who I was a little bit more, I started understanding, you know, my ego and things I could control. So when I give advice, I'm always just coming from that place of I'm just really trying to empower my audience. But back to why I started therapy, it was during the pandemic. And honestly, I just kind of thought to myself, I always talk about people should get therapy and I've never had therapy before and I'm not against it. So like, fuck it. Like, yeah. Why don't I just start therapy? And I figured it wasn't like, there wasn't like, oh, I'm just so down or anything like that. I know I could benefit from it. I know I have anxiety. I know I ruminate and overthink and things like that. And, you know, and I'm sure like you guys are the same, you know, the fact that we are talking more and more about mental health and just recognizing it, you know, with the word health being in that word and that, you know, that phrase or whatever, you know, physical health, dietary health, you know, like we have all these like programs and we're so open about it and you can diets and exercise and you know people don't go to the gym when they're like on the verge of having to go to the hospital because they're so physically out of shape. People don't change their diets necessarily always just when they're like at death's door, right? They often are just like, you know, New Year's resolution. I want to like feel a little bit better. And yet before this kind of new kind of awakening with mental health, it was like, well, I'm getting a therapist. People are like, oh, well, what's wrong? Are you suicidal or something like that? And So I just kind of wanted to, you know, be, you know, if I was going to advocate for therapy, I wanted to get therapy as more of a maintenance kind of approach. Sure. And it's been quite helpful. And certainly I was able to uncover a lot of things that therapy helped me with and helped me, my own mental health and things like that.
Yeah, I think mental health is becoming more of like a thing that you're working on constantly instead of just like treating when it's really bad. And that's what we talk about, right? It's like, there's a spectrum. It's like not all dark. It's like all the good stuff too. And going to therapy is like going to the gym. I'm curious, when you did start, what was your first mental health experience now, like looking back, whether or not you kind of realized it at the time? Like you said, you used to like overthink a lot and like some of that like anxious like feelings. Like what was it for you that when you think back now?
Well, probably my first heartbreak, you know, in terms of I probably could have used a lot of therapy then.
Yeah,
because, you know, when you're 19 years old and you're experiencing your first heartbreak, it's you don't really know what's going on, you know. It's hard to process the feelings of what feels like severe loss, you know. Like, quite honestly, sometimes I think for a lot of people experiencing heartbreak for the first time, kind of feels like death. You have nothing to compare it to, right? Yeah. You know, you've never been in love before and you feel these incredible feelings and then they go away, you know? And I always kind of compare it to love's kind of, it's like a car and, you know, we have all these like driving classes to get your license. And then if you get, you know, love's like a race car, you know, and yet no one's like teaching us how to like drive it. And we just get in, step on the gas. And, you know, usually we mess up and crash. And so, yeah, I mean, I've had a couple bad heartbreaks. You know, my first relationship was one of those kind of those toxic, you know, we broke up a bunch of times. We didn't know what the heck we were doing kind of thing. And yeah, it, being someone who's a ruminator and overthinker and who has an ego, who is highly competitive, like all those elements that, again, serve me well in other aspects of my life were definitely kind of an enemy of mine when it came to, you know, when I was hurting, right? Because, and I think a lot of people do that too. And then we have all this, you know, media who tell us to romanticize relationships and fight for love and things like that. I just had a really hard time accepting the loss and what the situation was. And I tried to not accept it. And then I tried to force it and fix it. And I think therapy would have really helped.
Yeah. Well, speaking of fighting for love and heartbreak, I know you don't love to talk about it, but we wanted to bring up just kind of the Bachelor universe. I was like so excited to talk to you about. I've been a casual fan of the show, I could say, during my childhood, kind of just catching episodes here and there. Being in it for so long, I'm just wondering what your experience was when it comes to being authentic to who you are and trying to navigate the attention that comes with the show, kind of the cameras, all of the extra stuff outside of what everyone's actually there for. How do you kind of view that experience now that you're a bit removed from it?
Yeah, it's a lot different now.
Yeah.
Because social media has changed so much. And when I first went on, when I first went on, Paradise didn't exist. They actually, their first season of Bachelor in Paradise was following right after my first season on The Bachelorette. And I think the rise in social media and Bachelor in Paradise has completely changed the game, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone's different. I was very fortunate that I went into the show older. You know, I was in my mm-hmm. early 30s when I first went on. And that, you know, everyone's, you know, they cast any people from, depending on the Bachelor, Bachelorette, you know, 22 to, you know, they, right. You know, Kenny's 40 and he's on the show currently. So it can change a lot. But being someone who You know, I think being in a large family really helped being in that atmosphere. Mm-hmm. I think working in corporate America in sales in a highly competitive environment and a highly stressful environment helped and things like that. So for me, I think that helped. And I have a side of me that really, I have a really earnest side to me. And I ended up like, you know, I was one of the people, it's different for everyone. So it really kind of depends on how much attention you get from the lead will certainly dictate how much like authentic your feelings might be. You know, if the lead doesn't really pay attention to you, cause there's so many people,
right.
If you know, it's just hard for you to develop feelings if you're really being honest with yourself, but
yeah,
for better or worse, and you can debate which one, like, you know, she gave me a lot of attention. I'm very much attracted to her and I got sucked in. And so from that point on, I was very desperate to try to make it real, even though the whole environment is super weird and not real. And that can be really hard to navigate because, quite frankly, that then the show can, if they can choose to use that against you if they want, because you're kind of just losing your mind in a very controlled environment.
Yeah, I feel like when I watch the show, something that I'm always thinking is like, who is this person really? And like, are they putting on some sort of act or persona, or is this really who they are? I'm wondering if you struggled at all with that, like being someone who you thought the lead would like, or just I'm going to stay true to myself and kind of feeling those different pressures, what your experience was like there.
Yeah. I can't speak for everyone. I think it's kind of a spectrum in terms of how people approach it. Or how they respond, and there's so many variables, right? There's a handful of guys who, like, if it's The Bachelorette, they might not get attention, and they're just kind of like going through the motions. They're like, yeah, she doesn't like me, and you know, I hope I stick around, but like, whatever, and
right,
you know, and they have fun on their group dates. And then there's other guys who, you know, you'll see who are like week three, they've had no time with her, but they're all like, I feel this incredible feeling and I'm falling in love. And you're just like, you're full of shit, man. Like, it's, come on. Like, what basis is based on what? And then there's other people who do get attention, and some of them like, you know, and some of them fake it, and some of them really fall in love. And so it can definitely change. What was I lost my train of thought, but what was the...
No, I was just curious about like maintaining like your sense of self. I think that you kind of answered it in a way, like by being older, I think it was so important. Like when I think about being 22 years old, it's like, I had no idea who I was when I was 22 years old. I'm almost 30 and I still don't really know. So like, am I trying to build my brand? Am I trying to fall in love? Am I trying to make friends? It's like, there are so many different things that you're kind of thinking about, or that I imagine you would think about, that all seem like a completely different headspace and energy than the main reason that you're supposed to be there.
Yeah, I feel incredibly fortunate in a lot of ways. I think I got really lucky in some aspects. Again, like one, I was older when I went on, and two, like I said, you know, I went on for the first time in a very unique time. And like I said, it was when Paradise first started. It's when social media existed, but it wasn't the behemoth that it is now. And so I kind of was able to learn as I went, and expectations were different. And now people come in with this perception of the way things are, and it's definitely not the reality of the way things are. Or so, you know what I'm saying? So I was able to very much kind of learn slowly and learn on the job. In a way. And I think if I went on as a 22 year old, I would have been a mess. And even now, just like with all the things, when people go on, you know, I empathize with the people, because like, you know, listen, if you go on, like you're clearly, there's a clear opportunity for a handful of people, and who wouldn't want to take advantage of the potential platforms that the show can bring. So then how do you be authentic to yourself while still trying to take advantage of the opportunity? And people really struggle with that. And obviously the show leverages that dilemma. And I feel very fortunate to have gone and started when I did, because I think I got that kind of era, so to speak, and those kind of few seasons. I think the people there were really lucky to learn on the job, so to speak.
Is there anything that you would have done differently, looking back on your experience at it now?
Not really. It's all really worked out for me quite well in terms of, I mean, I could nitpick little things, you know what I'm saying? Like, sure. Certainly, but
we all
I look at the whole thing and I'm like, I don't know how it could have gone better. because, you know, sometimes, you know, having been like the villain on Andy season and at times polarizing, you know, as someone who really quite likes to be liked, that can be stressful.
Yeah.
But I also have, I need to be honest. And yeah. And sometimes the need to be honest and be heard doesn't always line up with everyone liking you.
With the narrative, yeah.
And so that's like a life struggle I've always had. That's not specific to the show. This is who I am. So yeah, overall, probably not, other than like maybe a few isolated micro decisions. But yeah, I can't imagine it could have played out better for me.
For sure. And I'm curious, like, obviously, like, relationships mean a lot to you, and like there's such a clear connection with like mental health. Was that sort of the inspiration to start the podcast, or what was that initial spark? And then like now looking back, like, how has that gone for you?
Yeah, I mean, in my 20s, I had three serious relationships, all of which, you know, had different degrees of seriousness and different degrees of kind of how healthy or not healthy they were. And kind of like you got, like, I don't feel like I really learned who I was until I was 28. And
that's good, because we're 27. So
there you go. There you go. But I've always kind of been a very introspective person. So when I was really struggling, I was just trying to really think of, you know, about myself. And it wasn't until I was cheated on that I really kind of started learning. Like I acknowledged my ego, right? Like I was like, oh, what's an ego? Okay, I got an ego. Okay, oh fuck, you know, like I guess that really gets me in a pickle sometimes. And so I've always really just I spent a lot of energy and time like trying to understand that and understand my decisions that I was making. And instead of wondering why she was doing this or why she said this or why she was doing and saying one thing and acting another, I started looking at my choices, which helped a lot. And it helped me be more honest with myself about the situation. I've always kind of, you know, said like the biggest liars any of us will ever meet are ourselves. Like we're in our heads constantly. The people we have the conversation, I don't even, you know, for introverted overthinkers, we have a lot of conversations with ourselves, but yeah. Everyone talks to themselves more than they talk to anyone. And it's very easy for us to lie to ourselves, you know, because we have an ego. And as a result, you know, when we get in these situations, we lie to ourselves. And so as someone who kind of spends a lot of time on myself, I became good at being the friend that would give you an honest assessment of the situation. And I just got good at giving that type of advice with my friends. And then as I got off the show and, you know, the podcast, everyone's starting a podcast and I like the chit chat and I have a gift for the gab. And it was like, well, instead of just like talking to myself, I'll talk into a mic. And I was like, well, one thing I definitely wanted to incorporate was I like being the friend who, if you have a question, I'll shoot you straight. And so I wanted to try that, and it's really worked out. But that's kind of the genesis of that. And then quite frankly, it's been an evolution, right? You know, like I just certainly didn't start a podcast saying I want to talk about mental health, but as I talked about relationships and things like that, I started to learn more about, you know, healthier relationships and different approaches and different remedies for things like that. And, you know, obviously quickly became an outspoken advocate for therapy and acknowledging your mental health and things like that.
Yeah. And was there anything that surprised you, like the reception towards the advice? I feel like it's like, I'm sure you didn't expect like, oh, like people are going to like love this like part of the show. But like, I feel like now it's like so clear that like you're great at it. People love it. It's like very honest.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I kind of knew I was good at
it. He's like, I knew it would pop off.
I believed in that ability, you know. I guess it was just the right amount of confidence. You know, I'm a very confident person, but I'm thankful that I also have the appropriate amount of humility to know that it always requires a shit ton of work and it's never going to be easy. But yeah, I mean, I had done other podcasts of friends and things like that and been on podcasts for, you know, and I knew I just had a knack for it. And so I was like, I really think I could be good at this. And so, yeah, I guess it was the right amount of blind confidence.
That's great.
That really made me believe in myself. Cause,
I love what you were saying about in your previous relationships, always kind of leading with her, and not really realizing until you got older to kind of look inward and like look in the mirror and focus more on ourselves. I can really relate to that with a lot of my kind of struggles and ups and downs in my previous relationships, always making them more about the other person. I think that was the natural place for me to go, because it's a lot easier to point blame and to say there's something wrong with you than there is with me. And it really wasn't until I was able to look myself in the mirror and realize all my behaviors and everything I was doing really have very little to do with this other person and have absolutely everything to do with me. And it's largely because of shit that happened before I even ever met this other person, right? And it's really sad, because that person ends up feeling so much of the blame and guilt and shame around these things. Am I not beautiful enough? Am I not making him happy enough? Am I not doing whatever X, Y, and Z? When in reality, it really has nothing to do with them. It seems like you've learned kind of a lot, obviously, being through all these relationships on such a public scale as well. It seems like you're in a pretty beautiful relationship now, so congratulations on that. And then I'm mainly wondering, what do you look for in a partner now, and what are some of your kind of keys to a healthy relationship?
Yeah, for me, it's safety. What I mean by safety is the ability to feel safe enough to be my truest self with whoever I'm dating. So that if that truest self is great, then great. If my truest self is annoying or not awesome, then I can at least, we can be honest with ourselves and then have conversations and communicate about those disconnects that we have in our relationship. But, you know, especially young love, and we just, you know, we always come in with the best intentions. And, you know, like I said, we're just a bunch of people, you know, getting thrown into a race car trying to figure out how to drive it. And so, yeah, it's just, I just want to feel safe and feel like I can be myself and still recognize that I'll always have things to work on, but I'll never feel like I'm not, you know, good enough or, you know, I had a lot of relationships where we were highly competitive with one another. Mm-hmm. And instead of sitting down and just saying, all right, I'm frustrated and I know it's not all your fault. I don't think it's all my fault either. So let's talk. You would just kind of passive aggressive little jabs and things like that. So safety is a big thing, and just obviously just communication. And also I kind of joke and that it's my current girlfriend, and my current, I mean, hopefully my last girlfriend I ever have, but I'm definitely the drama queen in my current relationship. And it's the first for me. It's the first time I've been the drama queen. And it's a real gift if you're lucky enough to be the drama queen. It's really quite nice.
Yeah, something you first said when it came to what safety means for you as the ability to be yourself and be your true self. I feel like I hear from a lot of people that sometimes they don't know what that is, and like, what is my true self, and how can I find that? Is it possible to find that with a partner? Is that something you can only find on your own? I'm curious for both of you guys, because Payman's in a relationship as well. How do you feel like you guys can really get to know who you truly are and find your true self?
You want me to go?
Yeah, you go first.
Yeah,
I'll think.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's different for everyone. Again, I'm always in my head, so sometimes for me, part of it is I've been able to leverage my ego to help, right? Because I don't think ego is always oftentimes in my podcast, I'm like, I feel like I'm always shitting on ego. It's like, oh, well, it's your ego. It's just fucking with you. But I think the ego can be a really great thing. It's actually like something that was like a survival mechanism for us, like in prehistoric times. But it's like a superpower that's just really hard to control, you know? Yeah. And if we don't control it, it can do a lot of damage. But at the same time, my ego never wanted to feel like, for me, something that's really triggering for me and I'm really sensitive to that if I were to like walk in a room and hear people talking about me, let's say negatively, or just honestly, and I was never like aware of like the thing they were talking about, like that would be hard for me to hear. Like, you know what I'm saying? I want to be ahead of it. You know, yeah. I don't want to find out through other people. So that's just a really introspective person I try to have. But also like asking your friends is really helpful. It's hard to do. It's hard to hear the truth from friends. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, to be honest, if you've had two or three girlfriends, you know, for a period of time, I don't mean like casually dating, but let's say you've had two or three girlfriends, or maybe, you know, listen, the truth is if you dated them for a period of time and you sit down with each of them individually, you know, and they were honest, they're all going to tell probably the same, like, you know, like he's great. He does this Y or Z, but like, I fucking hate it when you know, they do that. Right. So when you break up with people and you think about your relationship, all this, you know, ton of the gripes they'd have. Well, sometimes you would want to, you know, if they gripe to you, you gripe back, but like not all the griping is necessarily to be hurtful. Like maybe you're just really irritating in certain aspects of your life. So I've just had to accept that and figure out who I am and then try to change the things I could control. And there's, quite honestly, there's other aspects where I'm just like, this is going to be who I am, you know? Yeah. And I'm just never going to be very good at other things. And it doesn't mean I can't stop trying, but there's a certain level of like, I recognize I'm very introverted qualities. You know, I'm an ambivert, but I'm in the middle, but there are certain things I just recognize I'm just not going to be good at. So I just acknowledge it and move on.
Yeah. I think for me, I mean, that's great advice. I think, yeah, the control piece has always been something for me in all my relationships, or just like, I like being ahead of things too. I like knowing what's going on before, instead of like learning about it later. And yeah, I think part of it is about like growing and time with someone and really being able to like look inside at like some of the things you don't like in the relationship and being able to see if that's like what part of that is me versus what part of that, you know, should we talk about, should we work on together? So yeah, I think that's where I'm at. I'm only 27, so I'm still learning, but
and also for me, I just learned the value of, you know, kind of taking it slow too. You know, when I was younger, you feel those feelings of love, you want to put labels on it, you want to define it, you want to set expectations, you want to start playing house and start planning for your future. And you know, you're, God, it just takes so long to get to know someone, you know, and that's okay, you know, and you can still be madly in love and still acknowledge that you have so much to learn. I don't think any of us want to be that simplistic that they can learn everything there is to get to know about someone in a couple months, right? Even though it feels like we've known each other forever, that's just because we're just all hopped up on emotions. So for me, it was just being okay with that, you know, just being okay with like not trying to be the most in love couple and just knowing, you know, what that was.
Yeah, I think for me, to answer my own question, what's helped me a lot has been to think back to what I was like when I was a kid and when I was a really young kid and think about the things that brought me a lot of joy and that made me feel really good in that moment, and then realizing that that person is still inside of me somewhere and is still a part of me somewhere, right? It's been all that work around inner child. And it's funny because I think back to that kid and I think about all the things that he liked to do, and those are still all of my favorite things that I would like to do, where I just feel uncompromised joy, whether it's just shooting around a basketball or going to an art museum or watching a movie with my dad. Like, those are still all of my favorite things. So I encourage anyone out there who is kind of struggling with their sense of self or who feels like they're comparing themselves to other kids a lot, whether online or back in school, to really think about, before all that noise, when you were just a kid hanging out at home or with your friends or whatever, what kind of things were you into? And I bet you'll notice how far you've strayed away from some of those things. And I think it'll bring a lot of peace to try and get back in touch with that person.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's, the comparison's a, It's not a good, I don't know if there's any value in comparing yourself to people.
Totally. And I guess, Nick, as we wrap up, my question for you is, like, how do you think about what's next? Obviously, like, you're on your mental health journey and trying to get better and all of that. How do you think about that versus, like, what you want to do in your career for the next 50 plus years as you keep, you know, living life?
Well, I certainly hope to continue to grow the Vile Files and expand, my network of shows, and I continue to do other things in the entertainment space. I try to be as open-ended as I can be, all while still trying to be, you know, focus-driven with my goals. I mean, as an accounting major, and then I ended up selling software, and now I host a podcast. You know, like, I never truly would have, like, that definitely wasn't my goal in my early 20s of, like, hosting a podcast about relationships and dating, all while recapping a reality TV show that I never watched before I went on it. So, like, I think about that. And so I think it's always important to, you know, not plan too much and be open, but at the same time, you know, certainly have goals. And so, you know, I kind of have my goals, you know, like, when people ask, like, how do you see yourself in 5 years? I don't really do a lot of that type of planning, but I do know, like, the things I want to grow. And I do think about the future and play the long game. Like, I think about how my decisions today are going to look in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And I think a lot about that. But I feel very incredibly fortunate. I do truly love what I do. It doesn't feel like work, and I feel very blessed to be in that position. And I hope to keep growing it and keep learning, and at the same time be open to new possibilities when it comes to my career. And then personally, like, you know, I've always wanted to be a dad, so that, you know, I haven't been able to do that yet, and so I'm excited about that possibility. And I got a dog not too long ago, and I'm obsessed with him.
That's the first step, right?
Yeah, he's only made me want to be a dad even more. And quite frankly, he's just really helped my mental health. So it's the first living thing in this world that likes everything about me. I don't mean love, because, you know, my mom loves everything about me, but she definitely doesn't like everything about me. But Jeff thinks I'm great, and that's really nice to have. But yeah, that's about it.
No, for sure. Two quick ones up before we let you go. The first, if you could nominate anyone to come onto the show who you think has a very inspiring mental health story, or someone who you just look up to who you don't really know about their mental health journey at all, who would you nominate to come on the show?
Oh, boy, you put me on the spot. I mean, my friend Ben Higgins always comes to mind, who was the Bachelor before me. Great guy. Very open about his mental health struggles, and just, you know, a genuine good soul. So he comes to mind. What else?
Is there, like, a Bachelor code where the person that was on before leaves, like, that president's letter in the desk, or what is that like?
Not officially. No, I, you know, the upcoming Bachelors will always, like, reach out to, you know, certain people. I've always tried to make an effort to reach out to people and offer, to answer any questions they might have. I truly try to be as helpful as I can, but there is definitely no official man. That'd be kind of funny if there was.
I could definitely see that going viral. And lastly, Nick, what makes you mad happy
right now? Jeff and Natalie. If I didn't have them in my life to share the success I've had, it would be a heck of a lot less fun. And it's really nice to be able to share the things that you've been able to make for yourself with people you love. They've been absolutely the best parts of my life, in the past year. So, 100%. Yeah. Those two.
For sure. And thank you so much, Nick, for coming on. Where can people find you?
Vile Files, my podcast. We talk a lot about relationships and dating. On Mondays, people call in with their stories, their questions, and I give them my 2 cents, as someone who's just trying to basically give them an honest perspective of their situation. If you're into The Bachelor, we recap The Bachelor often with various public figures and celebrity guests to recap the shows. And on Wednesdays, we, you know, similar to what you guys is, I will, you know, traditional interview episodes. So anywhere you find a podcast, Nick Vile on Instagram, Nick Vile on TikTok, that's probably enough for people to handle.
Yeah, that's amazing. We'll link all that in the show notes. Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate your openness in the conversation, and you know, keep doing you.
You too, guys, and congrats on Mad Happy. My girlfriend's a huge fan. She wants you to know that she's a size medium. she told me 5 times. So
yeah, thanks so much, man.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
Peace, Nick.
Bye bye.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in and listening to our episode with Nick Vile. We hope you guys were able to learn something from that conversation and take something with it that you can apply to your own life and your own mental health journey.
And thank you again to Nick for coming on. We're really loving his podcast. Definitely check it out, as he gives a lot of great advice on there, and you'll be able to keep up with everything he's doing.
We also want to remind everyone that mental health is an ongoing process and is something that takes daily work. For more information on how to get support, you can always find us at localoptimist.com/podcast.
And again, thank you so much to Cash App for joining us in helping better people's mental health. Definitely check out the show notes for more information on how to get involved in our mental health giveaway.
And as always, if you want to support the show, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Tune in next week for our conversation with one of the biggest YouTubers on the planet, where we talk about mental health. The Mad Happy Podcast is brought to you by Optimism.